A series of earthquakes rattle the Upper Lynn Canal on Tuesday, and the Haines School Board boosts financial support for student travel. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. Independent candidate Bill Walker holds a razor-thin lead over Republican incumbent Governor Sean Parnell. But the Alaska governor's race remains too close to call after Tuesday's election. More than 24,000 ballots remain to be counted, and that won't happen until Tuesday. Meanwhile, Republican Senate candidate Dan Sullivan leads incumbent Democratic Senator Mark Begich by 8,000 votes, and Democrat Forrest Dunbar conceded his bid for the House seat to longtime incumbent Republican Don Young. All three ballot measures appear to have passed after Tuesday as well. But looking closer to home, those would not be the results if the rest of the state had voted like Southeast. Begich would be heading back to D.C., Walker would have solidly won the governor's seat, and Forrest Dunbar would have probably squeaked by, depending on absentee and question ballots. Of course, that's not what happened statewide, but that's how Southeast residents as a whole cast their ballots Tuesday. Southeast also voted strongly for all three ballot measures addressing pot, the minimum wage, and protecting Bristol Bay. That, at least, matched the statewide count. Locally, the Upper Lynn Canal had strong voter turnout, with Klukwan having the highest at 53%. The lowest was the Mosquito Lake area, with just under 38%. Early voting also played a big part in the election this year. In House District 33, just over 700 people early voted. About 200 of those were in Haines, and 70 were from Skagway. Begich, Dunbar, and Walker received the overwhelming majority of the early votes. All the Upper Lynn Canal districts voted in favor of the ballot measures, but one interesting statistic was the margin of votes in Klukwan for ballot measure 2. While the majority did vote to legalize marijuana, it was the closest margin of any of the races. That would align with the trend that rural and native communities across the state were more hesitant to approve the legalization of pot. Many rural communities and leaders voiced opposition to the measure. As for our local legislative districts, Democratic Representative Sam Keto won the seat he was appointed to in January after longtime Juneau Representative Beth Curtula resigned to accept a fellowship at Stanford. The Democrat took 75% of the vote. His challenger, Republican Peter Dukowitz, took nearly 24%. Keto said his priorities in the next legislative session will be to fully fund education and universal pre-kindergarten. During the upcoming session, he thinks major issues will be the Alaska National Guard scandal, dealing with declining oil revenues and the budget, and marijuana legalization.
There will be a necessary response to the marijuana initiatives, trying to put statutes together to initiate the legalization of marijuana. And I suspect that that will take a fair amount of work.
Dukowitz said he's looking forward to finishing some projects he's put off during the campaign. He's not sure he'll run for public office again, but he's not ruling it out.
I would like to say yes, I'll, you know, start running tomorrow. But, you know, the demographics here, I think it's going to be tough. But you never know.
Senator Dennis Egan, a Democrat, also easily beat his Republican challenger, Tom Williams, in Senate District Q, 71% to 28%. For the past 2 years, Egan has caucused with the Republican-led Senate majority. Next year, he says he'd like to see the body return to the bipartisan majority that existed prior to 2013.
I would love to return to a bipartisan coalition. I think Jerry Stevens did a great job. I'm not knocking what President Charlie Huggins did, but it just seemed to work smoother.
Results of the election are unofficial until certified later this month. The Upper Lynn Canal woke up to a moderate earthquake Wednesday. The Alaska Earthquake Information Center reports the magnitude 4.58 trembler occurred at 7:03 a.m. It was centered about 28 miles west of Haines at a depth of 2 miles. There were no immediate reports of damage or injuries. Residents of Haines, Klukwan, Skagway, Juneau, Douglas, Hoona, Elfin Cove, Sitka, and Whitehorse reported feeling the quake. The larger quake was followed by a series of smaller ones throughout the day. They were all less than 3.0 magnitude and centered in the same area as the first. The quakes come 1 week after engineers visited Haines to present information about the structure of the Lutac dock. In that presentation, they talked about the dock being at the end of its life, and engineers said a quake in the 2-3 magnitude range could damage the dock significantly. Borough Public Facilities Director Carlos Jimenez said Wednesday the dock appears to have survived the quakes with no additional damage. The borough is constructing a new $30,000 slab on the dock this week. The slab will help spread the weight of loads and equipment as it passes between the weekly supply barge and the dock, easing the load on the dock as the borough continues to work out a plan to repair or replace it. The Haines School Board on Tuesday decided to boost the school district's financial support for activities travel to state competitions. They also approved a year-long leave of absence for a science teacher. KHNS's Emily Files has this report.
Six Haines High School students were selected to sing in the All-State Music Festival Choir, which takes place in Anchorage in late November. About 950 students statewide try out for the choir, and 130 make it through. School Board President Anne-Marie Palmieri's son was selected as an alternate for the choir, which means he could join the other six students at All-State. Palmieri says she suggested music director Christy Kissinger-Totten ask the school board for funding help.
And the reason that I did that is because we do not pay for state travel from our activities fund.
The school district's $125,000 activities budget pays for students' travel to Southeast games or festivals. But for state competitions, the district provides a flat amount of just $100 per student. In this case, that puts $600 or $700 toward the more than $5,000 estimated cost for the choir students' trip to Allstate.
I just think that that really puts a hardship on the kids and on the parents and on the coach or, you know, the music director.
So far, the seven students have raised more than $4,000 with fundraising. But even though they're getting close to covering the All-State trip, choir is looking at how to pay for travel to three more music events. The school board and superintendent agreed state events are meaningful for students. Here's Superintendent Ginger Jewell.
I think it's important. I think it's critically important that kids get these experiences.
Most of the board members seemed open to increasing funding for state travel. But board member Sarah Chapel said they shouldn't take away the responsibility of fundraising.
I think that fundraising is an important experience, and you gain something from putting your blood, sweat, and tears into working your way somewhere.
Board member Brenda Josephson was hesitant about what kind of precedent the board would set if they helped these students with state travel.
With the hard choices that we're making right now, it's hard for me to understand why we would change this at this point. And it's hard for me it's hard to say no. It's really, really hard to say no.
So the board said yes. In addition to the $100 per student, board member Sarah Swinton proposed the school district pay a one-to-one match to the team's fundraising up to a max of $2,000. That proposal passed unanimously. That means if a group were to raise $1,000, the district would give them $1,000. If they were to raise $5,000, they would get the max of $2,000. If they didn't fundraise at all, they would just get the $100 per student. So these six or seven students will get $2,000 more to help with their travel to Allstate. Some of the money they've raised already will go toward travel to other events. Music director Christy Kissinger-Totten.
So I think that this will benefit everything that's happening in the school. We have a lot of remarkable kids, and we have a very generous community, and I think that it puts that together really well and will help us continue to excel.
School District Administrative Assistant Ashley Sage says money for state travel will come out of the school district's general fund, not the activities fund. Sage says the school board will have to work that into the budget at upcoming meetings. The school board also approved a year-long leave of absence for high school science teacher Mark Fontenot. Fontenot has taught at the Haines School for more than 20 years. In a letter to the school board, he says he wants to take an unpaid year off to travel with his wife and son. Fontenot says he's not burned out, but that he's ready for a hiatus. He asked the school board to grant him a year off with the promise that he will have a job to return to.
I need to do this leave. I need to leave. I'll leave regardless. But I'm not done here. I don't feel done here. I'd love to come back and teach more. I don't feel like I'm finished with my teaching career.
Superintendent Jewell says she's concerned about the district being able to attract a talented teacher to fill in for Fontenot for a one-year job.
I think it would be very disruptive to the educational process for our kiddos.
But the school board members were in favor of approving Fontenot's request. A few said they want Mr. Fontenot to teach their children, and they would rather lose him for a year than lose him forever. The board also set a meeting on November 12th at 7 p.m. to talk about the school district's homeschool program. The public is invited to attend. Reporting in Haines, I'm Emily Files.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. We had reports from Emily Files and Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support. NPR is making some changes to its schedule, and that means KHNS is as well. Starting November 17th, join us for Lynn Cannell Morning, live each weekday beginning at 6 a.m. for updates on local news, weather, road and marine conditions, as well as the national and state news you depend on each morning. We look forward to starting the day with you right here on KHNS.